What's it take to produce a stunning nature documentary that'll really light up those huge IMAX theater screens around the world? Filmmaker Mike Day joins us in just a bit on today's Travel with Rick Steves to share what it's been like. And we'll check in with listeners like you for reports on how they've enjoyed international travels designed around their hobbies and special interests. Let's start with a look at an ambitious road trip Teresa Bruce and her husband took across Central and South America. In an earlier edition of Travel with Rick Steves, Teresa told us why she felt she needed to retrace an epic 1974 family road trip down the Pan-American Highway. She's back with us to tell us more about how this time they actually got their camper to make it all the way to the tip of South America. Teresa, welcome back.
Nice to be here.
If you were in the United States, is this the idea you can just get on this road and keep going south and eventually get to Tierra del Fuego?
You can, and that's part of the appeal. I mean, you're literally passing through North America, Central America, and South America on one stretch of road. Except there is a break right in the middle at Panama. There's what's known as the Darien Gap, and the Pan-American Highway does not cross that. In fact, you still can't really get through. I think there was an exploration attempt, but it's jungle, it's in disputed territory. So at the very end of Central America, you have to find ocean passage to get your rig to South America. And that's what we did. We found a roll-on, roll-off container ship that took our camper, and then we met it on the other side in Manta, Ecuador. It took us at least 3 weeks to try and secure passage. Those ships only leave when there's enough cargo.
Oh.
And, you know, some go to Colombia and some go to Venezuela and some go to Ecuador. And you have to make the determination of, you know, where it's safe to go. There's all kinds of different ways that you can secure passage. You used to be able to actually ride with your vehicle on those crossings, but after 9/11, you can't. So it's quite logistically challenging. That was definitely the hardest part logistically of the drive down the Pan-American Highway.
So you look at the map and Panama is an isthmus, and it, you know, meaning you can get across. But in actuality, if you're driving, it's not an isthmus. You've got Central America and you've got South America and you've got to find a way around.
Yes. And the camping along the Pan-American Highway really sort of stops after Mexico. There's no formal campground system until you get to Argentina, where every town has a central campground. And it's wonderful. There's a camping and driving culture in Argentina that makes it much easier. So if you make it all the way to Argentina, you will be rewarded, drivers out there.
And what do you do in the interim? I mean, north of Argentina, you just stay in roadside motels?
In Latin America and South America, it was a little different. In Central America, sometimes it was too hot to actually sleep inside a camper that was old and didn't have air conditioning. So we would pay a hotel to let us just park the rig in their parking lot and maybe use the shower. Mm-hmm. Once we got to South America, even that level of travel infrastructure was harder to come by. So generally, you would just try and find a farm or a gas station or something and ask the owners of the land if it was okay if you parked your vehicle for the night and offer some sort of payment. And that was a great way to meet people and to really see how real people in the continent live. And, you know, you're not always going to have a level parking situation. You're not going to have any facilities, but you're really out there experiencing it.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Teresa Bruce, and she's written a book called The Drive, Searching for Lost Memories on the Pan-American Highway, that describes her epic road trip from Oregon all the way down to Tierra del Fuego. And Teresa, you write that in Latin America, you found it felt just as safe as North America, and that commercial news is what skews our perception so much. I just find that so hard to believe. It's funny how the image of driving through Latin America is just one of danger. Is it just because we're thinking about bandidos and drug lords and Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, or what's the deal?
I think, and it's just fear of the unknown. Latin America isn't really in our consciousness unless we're seeing negative news about it. And what we found was the exact opposite. Now, the roads, I'm going to tell you, they're not great. So we had four-wheel drive, and that helped in many situations. And, you know, crossing the borders is as much of a communication challenge as it is anything else. But it really wasn't. We were never physically threatened. But one piece of advice I would give people who do long road trips like that is we took a pledge, my husband and I, that if either one of us at any point along this long, long road trip really got spooked, really felt like we were in danger or that a situation just looked like there wasn't a good escape route, Our pledge was to trust each other's instincts. And if someone had that feeling, then you would turn around and drive away without questioning and without argument. And that, just taking that pledge as a traveler, is really what calms you down and lets you realize that you actually aren't in danger and that you can avoid bad decisions.
You're driving over 13 borders, encountering police and corruption and briberies. What was your contact with the local police, and to what degree did you need to know the whole bribing culture?
Well, I had a bit of experience having done this as a child, but, you know, at first we fought the bribe, the mordita. The word in Spanish means like little bite, and it's just so irritating. You know, it's not the way things work in our culture. But gradually, when you travel through enough countries in Central and South America and you see the poverty and you see the living conditions, you realize that it's just part of the system. It's just part of the privilege you pay to be able to drive through in relative luxury and just to satisfy your curiosity. And so we started thinking of them as donations instead. And you can't really fight it unless you want to get thrown in jail or have some sort of confrontation. And it's really not worth it. It's just about the experience and
And the bribes are not going to break the bank, or is it like 20 or 40 bucks or something?
Exactly. And you do pay some creative ones. You pay people not to have a lunch break right when you arrive, or you pay people not to run out of paper. It's those kinds of things that you just have to kind of turn your perspective and imagine it from theirs.
I remember going on the sort of hippie bus road from Istanbul all the way to Kathmandu, and After a while, I sort of measured how far we had yet to go by how many borders we had yet to cross. It was no problem going cross country, but the big stressful moments were crossing those borders. That's where you had to deal with the bureaucrats and the police and the searches and all that.
Exactly.
Did you have that kind of feeling in South America? You crossed 13 borders. Was it sort of like a mystery, upcoming this next border? Do we need to hire somebody to shepherd us through? Do we have a big delay? Do we have all the documentation we need?
That is the least fun part of a big road trip through South America. Mm-hmm. And in fact, there's this great word for kids sort of flood your vehicle when you pull up to an overland border crossing, and they jump on, and they're called tramadores, which sounds traumatizing, but that is really
and
what they're trying
the
to skids. Do.
They get you through?
Exactly. You pay them off, and that's what you do.
And then the roads. You write about how in Bolivia the roads are so bad that if you take a taxi, it'll leave you on the main square just so they don't have to drive down the little lanes that'll mess up their tires. What were the roads like? I think Bolivia is most famous for bad roads, isn't it?
It is. And some people actually go for just that reason, the thrill of it. I'm not so thrilled by these terrible roads, but sometimes it's inevitable. In Bolivia, when we were traveling, the main highways and bridges had been washed out in a flood. And so we were forced to literally drive over what they called carriage route. And what that really meant, once you sort of left pavement to gravel to cobblestone, and then it was just ruts across the Altiplano, and they were the actual wagon routes that people and merchants and villagers would use to sell goods from village to village. So the roads in Bolivia are every bit as bad as you'd imagine.
Did you ford streams? Were there times where you had to wish there was a bridge?
Yes, one time in Bolivia. It's all in Bolivia, I think. The bridge was washed out, and so we were sort of stopped in the road going, what do we do? And this big semi-truck just pulled right around us, went down the embankment, drove along the river, drove up and crossed over a single railroad trestle. And we went, oh, that's what they do. So we just followed along, and it was so narrow that I had to get out and walk backwards over these planks, motioning Gary so that he knew to come a little to the left or a little to the right as we crossed this raging river. And so those are the things that you have to learn to go with the flow.
And then you complement that with high altitude. Don't some of the roads just go like where you're actually in thin air?
You are. The highest point that we crossed was in Peru at around 15,000 feet.
Driving 15,000 feet, that's taller than Mount Rainier.
It is. It's incredible. And what happens when you do it in a day is that you're not even really cognizant of it, because we had a great vehicle, a Ford F-350. It could handle it better than we could. But we took a break at the top at around 15,000 feet, and we tried to make lunch, and we thought we'd go for a walk. And we didn't even realize how dazed we were. And at one point, you know, my husband's trying to take a picture, but he can't really stand up straight. And he says, look, they're over. And he's pointing to a shallow lake, and there's flamingos. It's like surreal. Why are there flamingos up here? They belong like in someone's grassy front yard in Florida, not at the top of the world. But they were feeding on the salt flats at the top of this pass.
At 15,000 feet. Teresa Bruce proves to us that you can go back. She writes about her two trips down the Pan American Highway, once as a young child in the 1970s, and then 30 years later with her husband. Her book is called The Drive, Searching for Lost Memories on the Pan American Highway. Teresa, you crossed 13 borders and a lot of poverty, but not uniform poverty. To what degree did you notice a difference of affluence from country to country and a difference of infrastructure and comfort level for a North American traveler?
There was a monumental shift south of Ecuador and Peru and Bolivia. That's where, I mean, these are some of the poorest countries in the world, and it's a huge attitude check. I mean, when you're driving through deserts and through borders where there are people in reed mat huts that just look like little cubes they've made in the desert, and it's all in the hopes that someday that land will be valuable and they can lay a claim to it and there might be water there. And so, you know, you definitely see more poverty, more isolation the farther south you get, but also more beauty and more a chance to just really open up and experience something completely unlike anything you will in North America.
But then does the affluence level rise in Argentina?
Yes. By the time we hit Argentina, not the northern part, that's still pretty isolated. But, you know, when you get into sort of Mendoza and the winemaking country, there is more of a calmness. It's more familiar. And there's more of an infrastructure. There are campgrounds in every town. And the roads are better until you get to Patagonia. So, yeah, it changes as you go, but the longer you drive, the more willing and able you are to kind of roll with those changes and appreciate the sacrifices that people make to live there.
Sounds like an adventure. Teresa Bruce, thanks so much for writing The Drive and sharing with us a little insight into what may be the ultimate road trip, the Pan American Highway. Happy travels, Teresa.
Thank you.
Teresa Bruce is the author of The Drive, Searching for Lost Memories on the Pan American Highway. She includes photos on her website, teresabruce.me. Mike Dade describes how exhilarating travels turned into spectacular nature films, next on Travel with Rick Steves.